Test, 1, 2. Test, 1, 2.
Oh.
All right, go ahead.
Jan's up here.
Good morning, everyone. Today is July 22nd, 2026. It's 9 a.m. We are all here for the regular meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board, Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Can I have a roll call, please, Jerry?
Mr. Allen?
Present.
Mr. Barmore?
Present.
Mr. Christensen is not here right now. Mr. McLean?
Here.
Ms. Horn?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Kovacs out. Mr. Bell?
Here.
And that's a forum.
Thank you. We're here for the regular meeting, and it's item number 1, approval of minutes. A, the regular minutes held June 24, 2026. Any comments or questions from board members or staff?
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of minor corrections, really just clarifications.
Great. Go ahead, Patrick.
Sure. On page 3, the last full paragraph there, about 5 lines up, it says that no employer contribution, this is was the presentation by CAVMAC regarding the valuation report. There's a line in there that says no employer contribution was necessary before the Great Recession. That's technically accurate as what was said in the meeting, but it's kind of lacking context and is a little confusing. So I would suggest amending that to say that no employer contributions were actuarially required for several years prior to the Great Recession, just to add a little bit of clarity there and put it into the context of the conversation that was occurring. The only other one I have is on the page 4 in the second paragraph. Again, just a clarification about, 6 lines down. It states that Mr. Langer noted there is an employer reserve baked into the overall CMERS. Again, that's technically accurate, but what was being discussed were amortization projections. So someone reading this and not listening to the meeting might be a little confused by that, so I just wanted to add those clarifications, and if the board's amenable, we will change those in the official minutes.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Right, not hearing any, we can go forward with those changes, and then we can probably best then to wait for the changes and then make a motion. Or can I make a motion, Patrick?
Yeah, you can just make a motion to approve the minutes as amended.
Awesome. I'll do that. I'll make a motion to approve the regular minutes for meeting held June 24th, 2026 with the amended changes. Do I have a second?
Oh, in second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the regular meeting held June 24th, 2026 with the amended changes passes. Thank you. Moving on to item 2, Chief Investment Officer Report. Will this be Eric or David this morning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eric has prepared a performance update for the board this morning.
Awesome. Thanks, David. Go ahead, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. The fund value as of June 30th was $6.71 billion. The return of 0.2% in June, net of fees, outperformed the blended benchmark by approximately 53 basis points. The primary relative performance drivers within manager selection, private equity added 32 basis points, and this was in a quarter-end month like June, we reflect our private equity benchmark. It was actually negative this quarter, and the private equity statements that came in were just a very slight negative, so they outperformed that benchmark, and that added 32 basis points to our fund's return. Brandis underperformed in the month of June, which detracted 8 basis points. And then within public equity style bias, that added 32 basis points to the fund. It's relative returns, and that was primarily from small and value biases. You can see in the table to the right that the fund is outperforming the year-to-date 5- and 10-year time periods, while underperforming or in line in all other time periods. Through yesterday in July, the fund is flat month to date, which brings the end date return to up 5.6% net of fees and the fund value to $6.71 billion. 9 of the fund's 13 active mandates are outperforming year to date, and the public equity, fixed income, and absolute return asset classes, along with the total fund, are exceeding their respective benchmarks year to date net of fees. Year-to-date, we've seen a change in the value of investments of $370.1 million, received contributions of $225.2 million, and have paid out benefits and expenses of $264.9 million. I'm happy to report that the Galliard account funded this month in July. The way we accomplished that is we did a full redemption from the BlackRock USA, which was about $222 million. We contributed $215 million to Galliard. That $7 million difference we kept in the cash account, so you can think of that as a monthly withdrawal. And, you know, this is an early meeting, so it's possible we still may make more monthly withdrawals, before the end of the month. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Eric. Any comments or questions for Eric? All right, not hearing any. Thank you, Eric. David, do you have anything to add, or are we
I have a few prepared remarks as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and thank you, Eric. Just briefly on the cash, it's the equity market in particular. It's been swinging around a bit. There's definitely like tug of war going on between kind of the AI theme names and the anti-AI, as some people call it, names. And on a day to day, there's maybe the market's not moving a huge amount, but a lot of names are moving around. So really, with this meeting being as early as it is in the month, managers don't need this far in advance to notice. So and really, if it's really day to day, sometimes between what my internal systems are telling me for who to withdraw from and how much. So we're going to wait a few more days. We may take some money out, and if we do, that'll be included in future reports. I think also I'll note that our fund has almost about $160 million in cash on hand, which is roughly 4 months of benefit payments. So we're not with the large anticipated city and agency contributions that we get, we expect to get in January too. Liquidity really isn't the driving concern right now. It's more of a risk management and rebalancing perspective. So if we take money out, you'll see it in a future report. We'll update you on that. If not, we're fine from a liquidity standpoint as well. A few other things. You'll get the details for second quarter performance at the September 10th investment committee meeting. That's scheduled. There will be some other interesting things on that agenda as well, including the annual pacing, private equity pacing study that we always do. Maybe just a little additional context with performance. Over the last maybe 6-7 weeks, or maybe you could even say since this board approved the new public equity structure study, I think it's interesting, like, to note in June that the stock market was, our stock market benchmark had negative return. The bond market return was just slightly positive. Our fund benchmark was negative, but as Eric just noted to you, the fund eked out a slightly positive gain net of all fees for June. The story kind of rhymes in July as well. Our stock market benchmark for the month of July so far through yesterday is negative. Bonds in this case are also negative so far in July, and as Eric reported, we're estimating roughly flat through yesterday net of fees. So we've talked a lot about how, you know, we've intentionally tried to become, you know, de-risking theme, the diversification theme more than the benchmark, and certainly a lot of the environment that we've gotten accustomed to over the last couple of years is stock market goes up a lot, we participate, but we don't outperform. You know, our fund is, I'm not saying we're gonna always get positive returns when the stock market goes down. That's definitely not, it wouldn't be a true statement, but in this type of environment where stocks are kind of treading water or slightly negative and markets are being challenged, it's nice to see our public equity structure add a lot of value over these last 6-7 weeks and see diversification help keep the fund value and the return roughly flat, slightly positive when everything around us is down slightly. My last prepared remark, I think you know we have two openings in the investment department here at the ERS. That the city posted that job last week. I think according to the city's website, the deadline for applying is August 7th. So again, if you want to see that job announcement, if you know anybody who might be interested, encourage them to apply for the position. And we'll keep you updated on that process as it goes, as it moves along. Those are the prepared remarks, my prepared remarks. If there's any questions, I'm happy to take them at this time.
Thank you, David. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? All right, not hearing any. Thank you, Eric and David. And we'll move on to item 3, new business, letter A, retirement claim and read for June 2026. Any comments or questions? Not hearing any, I will make a motion to approve the payroll for June of 2026. Is there a second?
4 seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve payroll for June 2026 passage. We'll get on to item 3, letter B, conference request, July 22nd, 2026, board meeting. Go through a few of the conference requests and the due diligence interest. First one will be for Eric Sauer, Thomas Courtright, and it's going to be Ernest Due Diligence, Atlanta, Georgia. The estimated cost of $1,200 per person in early September. The next one is also for Eric. It's AQR and UBF Due Diligence. That's in New York. That's in early October at a cost of $1,600. Next is a conference request for three individuals, myself, Gus Petropoulos. It's going to be hoping to attend, as well as Tim Helling. That's the NC First Public Safety Conference in Nashville between October 25th and 28th. That's rated cost of $2,600 per person. The next is for Thomas Courtright for the Prologis annual meeting in New York. That's in late October. That estimated cost of $1,400. Then we have Eric Sauer and Deborah Ford for the Brandeis Investor Conference. That's in La Jolla, California in early November. And that would be an estimated cost of $600. And also, we'll have an addition for that as well. And
one listed is for Eric as well for the Goldman Sachs Annual Investment Conference, also in New York. That's in November 9th through the 10th for an estimated cost of $1,500. I do have a late addition for Deborah's request. There's also going to be the trip for Veranda as well as a DFA due diligence trip. That's going to be with David in September. And that one, Santa Monica is included in there with a travel time of September 25th to the, September 22nd through the 25th with estimated cost of $2,300.
Mr. Chair?
Any comments or questions? Yes, go ahead, Deb.
I didn't have a request for the Brandeis Investor Conference. It was only for the due diligence in September.
Got it. So we'll scratch the for that for Brandeis, but remain the one on there for the trip with David
yes.
in September.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did I miss anything or anyone else added or taken off the request? All right, not hearing any, I will make a motion to approve the request as dated for July 2026 board meeting. Is there a second?
Second. Second from Barmore.
Oh, thank you, John. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objection. Motion to approve the conference request July 2026 board meeting passes. Moving on to item three, letter C, the approval of the 2025 basic financial statements, unaudited version. And who will be handling that, Patrick?
Mr. Chair, we have Deputy Director and former Chief Financial Officer Dan Gopalin, who will be handling this item.
Thank you, Patrick. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. In the board packet, there is the unaudited basic financial statements. My plan is to briefly go over the financial statements. The financial statements are currently under audit by the Wisconsin Legislative Audit Bureau. So that is why the financial statements are unaudited. Once the audit is completed, I plan to go over the actual audit and the full annual comprehensive financial report, the ACFR, at a later meeting after LAB has completed the audit and issued their audit opinion. Per Wisconsin state statute, the Legislative Audit Bureau's audits are confidential prior to the issuance of the audit report. So I won't be able to answer any questions or really talk about the actual audit until LAB completes the audit and releases their opinion. The reason why we're asking for approval of the unaudited basic financial statements is that we plan to release the 2025 annual comprehensive financial report at some point in the future, and we wanted to give the board an opportunity to review and approve the financial statements before the ACFR is released. ERS staff will coordinate with LAB once they have issued their audit opinion to release the financial statements. The staff is confident that the financial statements are materially correct. We don't expect these numbers to change substantially. However, the audit is still ongoing, and it's possible that there could be some changes. If there is a material adjustment, we would come back to the board and not present these again. So if that happens. Getting to the actual financial statements themselves, on page two, we have the statement of fiduciary net position. In the corporate sphere, this is kind of like a balance sheet where it shows all the assets and liabilities for ERS as of December 31st, 2025. There are three major funds that we present in our financial statements. There's two pension trust funds, the Global Combined Fund. That is for any ERS member who has consented to the global pension settlement, or they started at ERS after the GPS was in force, which would have been after 2001, I believe. The other pension trust fund is the non-consenter retirement funds. This is a small fund. There's actually three separate smaller little funds that make it up. It's the legacy retirement funds, the combined retirement funds, and the general employees due to disability funds. As you can see, it's a pretty small fund, especially in comparison to the global combined fund. The third fund that we present in the financial statements is the employer's reserve fund. These are actually the assets of the city of Milwaukee. It's money that they put in and invested with Baird, and ERS simply is administers that fund. So we present it as part of our financial statements. Looking at the actual numbers themselves, if you look, our total investments as of December 31st was $6.5 billion. And our liability, our total assets were $7.1 billion. We had $656,000 of liabilities, making our net position just under $4.5 billion. One thing to note with the liabilities, one line, it's the unearned contributions. It's just under $33 million. In 2024, we had about $6 million of unearned contributions. We made some changes in 25 when we sent out the employer contribution letters. Historically, we've always sent them out in December and get it ready for payment in January. But this year, we sent it out in November to give our employers a little bit of budget flexibility. If they have, you know, budgeted funds available in 25, they can use those funds to make the employer contribution in December. Or if not, they can make it in January if they don't have any 25 budget funds available. I just think it'll give our employers a lot more flexibility, and maybe we'll get our money sooner. So I just wanted to point that out.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Daniel.
Yeah.
Daniel, I realize that these are the GASB 67 statements. They're for disclosure. They're not the funding accounts.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Reporting.
But, and I probably should have looked this up, but I'm going to ask you instead.
How's okay. That?
Okay. So I think GASB 67 was what adopted for us in 2014.
Yes.
About there.
Yep.
Is this the first time that we've had total assets that exceed that position?
No, we've always had it based on the fund balance.
Okay.
We don't show our unfunded liability on our financial statements.
Right, I know, it's not funding. Right?
Yes, yep. So we just show the fund balance, our assets minus liabilities.
Like I said, I should have looked it up, but I didn't. It just occurred to me that I should have asked you. Thank you.
Yes. All right, moving on to the next financial statement. This is a statement of changes in fiduciary net position. This is like an income statement. For 2025, our total employee and employer contributions was $255 million. We had about $750 million in net investment earnings. And we also paid out about $500 million in benefit and administrative expenses. So in the end, our net position increased by about $500,000, which is great. I mean, I'm $500 million, I should say, not $500,000. So that just kind of shows you know, we had a really good year investing. Our return was about 12.9%. So even with paying out $500 million in benefits, we were still able to add to the fund's balance by $500 million. So we have a really good story to tell for this year. Hopefully we can keep on going, but we're slowly chipping away at that unfunded liability. Can you go back to the, I just want to talk briefly about the securities lending activity. right there, you can see we're showing a loss on our securities lending of $977,000. This is a little misleading because our income includes, our securities lending income includes an unrealized loss of $1.8 million. It's related to we have to mark the collateral that we receive from our borrowers of the securities of, we have to mark it to market at the end of the year, and we have about $309 million, so we had, the value went down slightly at year end, so we had to book that loss, and so that's that loss of $1.8 million. So that's why we're showing a loss in our securities lending activity. If you just look on like a cash basis, which is the way we kind of handle the transfer, we handle securities lending and then we make the transfer every January based on the cash balance. For 2025, we had about $620,000 that was transferred in January of 26. So on a cash basis, we are showing, we are making money on the securities lending. It's just due to the accounting rules, we're showing a loss on our financial statements. And the rest of the financial statements are essentially just the notes. Terry, can you go to page 15? I just want to point out one thing. Go back up to the top. Yep, and this just shows what Jerry was kind of talking about, the GASB 67 net pension liability. This shows, you know, our total pension liability is $8.1 billion. Our plan net position is 6.4. That excludes the employer reserve from the calculation. So that's why the plan fiduciary net position is a little less than the financial statements. But our net pension liability is $1.8 billion. And then our funded status, or our GASB 67 status of our ratio is 77.8%. So we're getting, the Mendoza line for funded ratio is about 80%. Is, you're considered well funded, so we're right on the cusp. Yes. Yes. So we're making progress on that end. That's all I really have for my prepared remarks. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair, I had a question.
Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, hi Dan. On page 14, just the consent status changes. Are we actively like reaching out to those people that aren't consenters, or is it, because it just kind of, it was news to me that like 172 inactive members, are those people that are just like retired or don't realize they have that?
When they come up for retirement.
Yeah. Generally, our big net to catch them is retirement. When they sign their paperwork, we explain it, and generally most members will consent to it just because they'll have increased benefits as a result.
Right, and it's important to remember that those benefit counseling sessions are, you know, essentially high touch sessions. There's a lot of discussions that go on, so members aren't slipping through the cracks without realizing that they don't have access to these GPS benefits. If they're eligible for them, they get counseled on it and have the opportunity to opt in.
Okay. Yeah, I figured it was that. It was just a bigger number than I thought.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. And Dan, any other comments or questions for Dan? Not hearing any, this item is up for a approval item. I will make a motion to approve the 2025 basic financial statement unaudited. Is there a second?
DeClean will second.
Ellen, second.
Justin, any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the 2025 basic financial statement unaudited passes. Thanks again, Dan. Moving on to item three, letter D, approval to suspend disability benefits for non-compliance with outside earnings limitation. We have the documents in the packet, and Patrick, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is an annual item that is a, I won't say a quirk, but a necessary byproduct of the rules governing duty disability benefits. Chapter 36 essentially provides that a DDR beneficiary's duty disability benefits combined with their outside earnings cannot exceed 100% of their current annual salary. And so if the combination of those two things does exceed 100% of the beneficiary's current annual salary, the duty disability benefit is offset by that amount. It's important to note that this does not apply to 90% duty disability beneficiaries, just 75% duty disability beneficiaries. And the way we sort of police this as a mechanism is that each year, by May 31st, duty disability beneficiaries have to submit an income tax return. We essentially use that to determine their outside earnings that are subject to this rule. And if any duty disability beneficiary covered by this rule does not submit their tax return on time, the board rules essentially specify that we have to treat them as though their outside earnings would totally offset their duty disability benefit. And that's where we are today, and that's what this agenda item is. Second important thing to note is that once these members become compliant, they will be entitled to back pay for any amounts that they would have been entitled to based on whatever outside earnings they end up reporting. I'm happy to report that since the time the packet went out, three of the individuals listed in this item have provided their outside earnings documentation. That's Daniel Lazarski, Corey Kilsdonk, and Stephanie Rams-Kugler. The other individuals, we are still pending, or have not received, excuse me, their required documentation, but if any of them are listening or anybody who knows them are listening, I would just like to provide notice that if they do get that paperwork in by July 23rd, they will still be paid on the July payroll, and there won't be any suspension of their benefits while we're waiting for that paperwork. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, we're asking for approval of this item.
Yeah, Patrick Van Barmore, point of clarification. That charter, the portion of that charter also covers ordinary disability, and there's a couple members on that list that are on ordinary disability and have the same reporting requirements.
No, that's a great point, John. Yeah, thank you for that clarification. So it does extend, it's essentially a disability benefit outside
and
earnings rule.
Early retirement.
And early retirement.
Yes.
There we go. Now we've covered everybody.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Patrick. Any other comments or questions from board members or staff? Right, not hearing any, I'll make a motion to approve the suspended disability benefits for non-compliance with outside earning limitations with discussed edited. And is there a second?
Ellen, second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve to suspend disability benefits for non-compliance with outside earning limitations with mentioned edit passes. Thank you, Patrick. Moving on to item three, letter E. We have August resolution. I will read it. Whereas no regular meeting of the board will be held during the month of August 2026, therefore be it resolved by the Annuity and Pension Board that the secretary is authorized and directed to pay bills, retirement allowances, death claims, and refund of contributions, and take whatever action may be necessary to administer the system, including approve disability reports of the medical council and medical panel application, and report such action to the board at the regular meeting on September 24, 2026. Denials will be held for action by the board at its next regular meeting. Any comments or questions about the August resolution?
Mr. Chair, one brief addition.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Patrick.
There was a question at the at last year's board meeting on the same item as to what we would do with appeals. So in the event there's a disability benefit application that's denied and is subsequently appealed, this resolution would not authorize staff to dispose of the appeal. If any appeals did happen to come up during the next month, which I think is probably unlikely, we would be holding that for the board. So the reference in there to approvals of disability reports only relates to initial approvals by the medical council and the medical panel.
Excellent. Thank you, Patrick. Any other comments or questions? Not hearing any, I'll make a motion to approve the August resolution as read. Is there a second?
One more second.
Thank you, John. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the August resolution as read passes. Moving on to item four. Medical reports, letter A, off duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for July 2026. Good morning, Gus. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. There are three reports before you today. The first is medical panel approvals report on a re-exam, just routine. The next is a medical council approvals report, which were all re-exams and fairly routine. Lastly is a medical council denials report. This is for a new application. They are recommending denial of Mr. Code's application for duty disability. And that completes or is in total of all the reports before you.
Thank you, Gus. Any comments or questions from board members or staff or Gus? Right, not hearing any, I will make a motion to approve the medical reports for July 2026. Is there a second?
DeClean will second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the medical reports for July 2026 meeting passes. Thank you, Justin. Moving on to item four, letter B, disability findings for Frank Lockett. This is requiring us to go into closed session. So I will read and then we'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chair. That closed session language is included just in case we needed to get into any sort of substantive discussion about this. I think it's generally a placeholder, but depending on trustee questions, we may need it. I think the initial discussion can happen in open session.
Awesome. If you just want to flag me when we might have to go in closed session, we can start the discussion in open session.
We'll do.
Go ahead, Patrick.
I think I'll, Gus, you want to handle this one or I can speak
I think
to it?
Probably refer to our counsel who okay. Actually litigated the appeal with Judge Foley, who was our hearing examiner for the appeal. And there was a co-counsel with you who started this, I think, was Joanna Project. So I will pass it on to Lori Rollins. Could you please kind of brief the board on proceedings?
I'd be happy to. Good morning, Mr. Chair, fellow board members, Attorney Lori Rawlings. Yes, there was an appeal from a denial of an application for duty disability benefits. And the hearing examiner conducted a hearing in, I believe, early June, at which witnesses were called, evidence was put in. The hearing examiner asked the parties to submit post-hearing briefing because the main argument shifted a little bit from the original position that the disability was back-related. At the hearing, Mr. Lockett referred to having problems walking due to drop foot. And so the hearing examiner requested additional briefing on that issue. The parties did submit briefs simultaneously. Then the hearing examiner issued proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law for you to discuss and ultimately act on as the final decision maker on this matter. Essentially, as you can see in your packet, hearing examiner fully found that the criteria for duty disability benefits were not met in this case because Chapter 36 requires that there be no pre-existing condition that plays a role in the disabling condition. And here there was evidence in the record that the drop foot condition that was alleged by Mr. Lockett to be his disabling condition was in fact a pre-existing condition. So he upheld the preliminary denial, he proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law upholding the disability denial, but the ultimate decision maker is this board. And so this matter is before you for your review and decision today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And Mr. Chair, before we proceed to a vote on this item, I believe it's customary to read the language contained on the item 4 marker under medical report. It's two paragraphs right under the agenda item there. The language under all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations.
For sure. So I'll start with the first paragraph and then go into the bold section. We'll read that, and it says, under item A, Frank L. Lockett, this is in the matter of denial of duty disability application. Independent hearing examiner Christopher Foley's decision came to the following conclusion. Hearing examiner Foley found that Mr. Lockett's pre-existing and pervasive degenerative disc disease is the cause, or certainly a cause, of his permanent disabling condition. Hearing examiner Riley wrote the following in his decision. As noted above, the presumption of correctness of the APB decision is not overcome if any reasonable view of the evidence supports it. Every reasonable view of the evidence in this case supports the view that Mr. Lockett's pre-existing and pervasive degenerative disc disease is the cause, or certainly a cause, of his permanently disabling condition, whether that be his chronic back pain or his foot drop condition. The presumption has clearly not been overcome.
Gus, do you have a clarification?
I do. It reads hearing examiner Riley. That should be corrected to read hearing examiner Foley.
Got it. All right, so the first sentence of the bold paragraph should be hearing examiner Foley. Excellent. Any comments or questions regarding this item? Right, not hearing any. Does this this is an emotion item, is it, Patrick?
I believe the board needs to vote to accept or approve the hearing examiner's findings.
Through a motion? Got it. I'll make a motion to approve the disability findings concerning Frank Lockett as stated on the record. Is there a second?
I have a second.
Thank you, Deborah. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any. Motion to approve the disability findings of Frank Lockett as stated passes. Thank you. Moving on to item 5, unfinished business, letter A, pending legal opinions and service request reports.
Good morning, Attorney Lori Rawlings. I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead.
Wonderful. Yes, I have one update under the legal opinions section, part one. ERS requested an opinion from the city attorney's office regarding under what circumstances a 1% residency incentive payment contained in the recently settled labor agreement between the City of Milwaukee and the Milwaukee Police Supervisors Organization, or MPSO, should be included in current annual salary for purposes of calculating duty disability benefit retirements. The City Attorney's Office issued an opinion on those questions on June 22nd, which is contained in your packet. And the opinion addresses three questions, which are whether the 1% residency should be included in current annual salary for purposes of calculating duty disability retirement benefits, whether it should be included when calculating benefits at the time of conversion to extended lifetime disability benefits, or whether it should be included at the time of service conversion retirement. And the opinion concludes that the 1% residency incentive should not be included in any of those three calculations. And, you know, the primary reasons are the plain text of Chapter 36, in addition to a decision in 2023 by the Wisconsin Supreme Court in Milwaukee Police Supervisors Organization versus City of Milwaukee, which you are probably familiar with. We colloquially refer to it as the 5.8% pension decision. And in that case, the Supreme Court looked at how to define current annual salary for purposes of duty disability benefits for purposes of the 5.8% pension offset, and determined that current annual salary, since it's not defined in Chapter 36, is most logically defined by looking at the salary grids in the collective bargaining agreement and then multiplying the numbers in those grids by 26, because there are 26 pay periods. It determined that language elsewhere in the agreement was not relevant to calculating the current annual salary. And so applying the logic of that decision, the 1% residency incentive is not included in the salary grids in the MPSO agreement. It is contained in a footnote to the salary grids, which the under the reasoning of the Supreme Court's decision, the 5.8% pension case is not included in that calculation. So the City Attorney's opinion is that the 1% should not be included for purposes of calculating the duty disability retirement benefit. Then the next question is whether it should be included in service conversion benefits. The those benefits are calculated based on the annual regular base salary in effect for the member's position in the year immediately prior to their service retirement. So it's calculated based on the regular base salary plus applicable earnable compensation. Earnable compensation is a defined term in Chapter 36 that does not include the 1% residency incentive language. It includes a number of other specifically enumerated items that are not included in that definition. And regular base salary is not defined in Chapter 36. However, the language of the collective bargaining agreement itself notes that the 1% residency incentive will be added to base pay for the employees with a bona fide residence in the City of Milwaukee. So under the reasoning of the 5.8% pension case, that 1% residency incentive should not be included in regular base salary because it's not in the salary grids themselves. Additionally, once someone becomes a duty disability retirement recipient. They are classified as a beneficiary under Chapter 36, not as an employee. And therefore, language in the collective bargaining agreement under the reasoning of the 5.8% pension case does not apply to beneficiaries. So in other words, because duty disability retirement beneficiaries are not active employees, they are beneficiaries, the 1% residency incentive should not be included in the calculation of their conversion to lifetime duty disability retirement. Then the final question is whether or not at the time of conversion to normal retirement, that 1% incentive should be included. And once again, service conversion benefits are not calculated based on the employee's actual pre-existing salary. They're based on the annual regular base salary in effect for the member's position in the year before they retired. So the 1% residency, because it only applies for active members, should not be included in that conversion benefit. I know that was a lot to digest, so I would be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, Lori, I have a question, point of clarification.
Yes.
As a reference as a point of fact in the decision, I referenced the Supreme Court ruling that you referred to as the 5.8% and the MPSO, but the language in there was, all the references were Article 10. It was the Local 215 firefighters part that they were referencing to the salary grids. That's and it was confusing, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Barmore. That is an excellent point. That's an excellent point. They were actually referring to the firefighters agreement in that decision, although the caption is styled as MPSO because MPSO was initially a party. So thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I can just hop in really quickly, you know, I think to tie this opinion up in a bow, in 2023, the Wisconsin Supreme Court gave us a really specific way or directed us to interpret the phrase current annual salary in a really specific way. And so, you know, once in light of that decision and the way it told us to, you know, essentially myopically focus on the dollar amounts that are listed in the salary grids of the collective bargaining agreements, there was really no other way to interpret this issue. We're essentially, you know, this opinion effectively just implements the guidance that the Wisconsin Supreme Court handed to the system in 2023. That's kind of the key takeaway.
Any other comments or questions? All right, if we're going to continue on with the service request report as well.
I actually don't think we have it listed for, it's not listed for any action.
Do you want to accept it and place it on file?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if you could just note that the opinion has been received and will be placed on file, I don't believe a vote is necessary for that.
Great. I can do that. The pending legal opinion, part one, for the Office of the City Attorney regarding the 1% residency incentive pay will be was reviewed and will be placed on file.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to finish up the report, two items in part three, or two of the items in part three, specifically the CAVMAC contract and the internal audit services contract, will be on the September A&O agenda, and the board can expect them to see those items at the September meeting.
Great. Excellent. Thank you, Patrick. And that completes item 5, letter A. Moving on to letter B, pending legislation report. And there is nothing listed there unless something came up since the board packet went out.
Nothing new. So clean report.
Awesome. Thank you, Patrick. Moving on to item 5, letter C, pending litigation report. This one does have a placeholder for a closed session if needed. What are your thoughts, Patrick?
Mr. Chair, I believe it might be advisable to move into closed session on this item to discuss pending or threatened litigation.
Great. I'll read through and then we'll entertain a motion. Please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board may vote to convene in closed session on the following item. 5C, as provided in section 19.85 sub 1G, Wisconsin State Statutes, to consult with legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation in which it is or is likely to become involved. The board may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Do I have a motion to go into closed session?
Who would make the motion?
Thank you, John. Any objections to go into closed? Can I have a roll call, please, Chair?
Ms. Allen?
Aye.
Mr. Barmore?
Aye.
Christensen is not there. Mr. DeClean?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Could say the time, please.
It is 9:58 a.m.
Hold on one second. And would you could say the time one more time, please?
You bet. 10:35 a.m.
All right, go ahead.
All right, we're back in open session. And wrapping up item 5, letter C, pending litigation report. Is there anything else, Patrick, or Lori, for the litigation report?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. So that concludes item 5, letter C. Moving on to item 5, letter D, the executive director's report, inventory of ERS projects. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will obviously take the report in order, beginning it with section 1, personnel update. I'm very happy to report that we are starting to see new faces in new places. The first item there, good news for someone here in the room, is that we have Robin Hayes has been appointed to the position of ERS Chief Financial Officer. We are extremely pleased that Robin has agreed to take on this role. She's here in the room with us right now, as I just mentioned, and we are very confident she will continue doing good things.
Thank you,
Rob.
Moving on to item B, we have welcomed Sonia Maldonado as a transfer to the ERS from the Elections Commission. She will be taking over the Benefits Service Specialist position, and both Robin and Sonia took on those new positions just this Monday. Item C, as David mentioned earlier, we do have a job announcement bulletin for the two vacant pension investment analyst positions. And as David indicated, that will close on August 7th. The last item there, we are very close, and I'm hoping the next board meeting is in September, so I'm confident at that meeting we will be announcing hires for the Office Assistant 3 and Records Technician 2 positions. So a lot of movement, it's all good news, and this won't be the last you see. We have a lot of staff who are retirement eligible, so we'll continue to see some turnover, but everything is humming along smoothly. I'm happy to report. Moving into Section 2, Member Services, there were 43 new retirees on the June payroll, and 58 are currently anticipated for the July payroll. You can see the standard list breakdown there. If anyone has any questions, I'm certainly happy to answer them. Section 3, Financial Services. The item I want to highlight again is item B there. For any individual that is affected by the outside earning requirements, please submit your paperwork before July 23rd, and your benefit will continue to run on the July 2026 payroll. And if you have any questions about that, please don't hesitate to reach out to staff. Section 4, Information Services. I'm happy to report on behalf of Jeff Schober that everything is looking good. No issues, nothing he wanted me to flag for the board. And then that final section, 5, Administration. Very happy to report that as a result of a meeting on June 24th, 2026, Hackham has agreed to make a roughly $1.9 million contribution to the ERS this year, and to continue making contributions in amounts equal to their actually determined employer contributions in future plan years. We anticipate meeting again with Hackham here before the year is out to develop a payment plan for its prior year obligations as soon as the agency completes its financial statements and develops their budget. Two additional pieces of news is that Hackham welcomed a Chief Operating Officer, Zena Farah, on July 8th, and then the board can also see the breakdown of the current outstanding amounts owed from Hackham as the in the attachment to the Executive Director's report. Unless anyone has any questions, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? All right, not hearing any. That completes item 5, letter D. Thank you, Patrick. Takes us to item 6, informational. We have items A through G. Any comments from board members or staff regarding those? Not hearing any. Item 6, letters A through G, will be placed on file. And that will conclude the meeting. I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Is there a second?
Ellen, second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the meeting is adjourned. Everyone enjoy the August break, and we'll see you in September. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. 10:40.
Enjoy your summer.